Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, it happened by the slimmest of margins, as is often the case in Florida, but Nikki Fried is now Florida's new agriculture commissioner-elect. Under a machine and hand recount vote, Fried was declared victorious by just a little over 6,000 votes. Fried will be a lone Democrat in the governor-elect Ron DeSantis' administration. She campaigned on a progressive platform of the three W's: weapons, weed, and water. Mrs. Fried joins us now to discuss her policy platforms, her wild election experience, and, of course, to answer your questions. Feel free to tweet us at WLRN Sundial, Facebook WLRN Sundial, or you can call in 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. And by the way, this may be a great opportunity, if in case you're not sure of what an agriculture commissioner actually does. Why not find out today? Let's ask. Ms. Fried, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, first, let's just say congratulations on the victory, but let's dive right into some of the big policy things because of what's going on in the news. On Sunday, Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, he's overseeing the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission. He suggested that teachers should be able to arm themselves as a school safety measure. He said it would be on a voluntary basis and require extensive training, but the proposal faces opposition, of course, from teachers' unions. How do you feel about that?
You know, quite honest, that's not something that falls underneath my purview. I try to stay into the lane. You know, obviously, Stoneman Douglas is in my backyard. I have said vocally that I did, you know, I agreed with the piece of legislation that passed last year's cycle. However, you know, the one caveat was, you know, arming teachers. But that certainly is not something, you know, that falls underneath my administration or the policies that I implement.
Now, you've appointed Fred Gutenberg, a key gun control activist, who's on that commission as part of your transition team. What role do you see him playing in this transition and possibly, again, talking about the issue of gun control policy?
You know, so Fred has been a huge supporter of mine because, as we saw in the previous administration, for 13 months, background checks were not done for concealed weapons, which is why I made it such a focal point of my administration, is so that the state of Florida citizens knew that why this position is important, that we have a key role in having these permits and making sure that there's background checks. So Fred understood this key position and its importance in the state of Florida, and has been a huge supporter. So Fred's involvement in the transition team, and the team is basically the charge the responsibilities of doing interviews and hiring key staff in my administration. So he'll be involved in kind of some of the interviews and the recommendations of people to hire on the consumer side of my responsibilities.
And you talked about the issue that came up under the outgoing commissioner, Adam Putnam, the controversy that he faced in his final year with concealed weapons permits, and that many of them were just given out without going through proper procedure. How do you view the current permitting system, and how exactly are you going to implement any changes to it?
I think that one of my responsibilities is to figure out exactly what happened, and if it was just a personnel issue or if that was a climate that was being administered through leadership. And so it would be my job first is to do a deep dive and see if it's all administrative aspect or it's because of the climate. And people need to know that we'll be working under my administration, that things like that are not acceptable, that our job is to make sure that background checks are done in an efficient and effective mannerism. And making sure that the people of the state of Florida feel safe and secure and have, our job is to do is, you know, servants of the people. And that comes with, you know, have huge responsibilities and making sure that people are confident in what is coming out of Tallahassee. So that's a couple things. I've also started seeing some of the things that have inside of the department, making sure that they're full-time employees who are doing the background checks. Previously, they were part-time employees. And then also having the conversation, which has already been started on numerous fronts, on actually moving the concealed weapons permitting and the other gun licensing to back to law enforcement. They are already instrumental in the steps of giving out a license. And that way you take politics out of the conversation, is that you put it into law enforcement and they make decisions based on public safety, not on political persuasion.
Now, you're a former lobbyist, so you know how things are done in Tallahassee. And I just wanted to get your take on Even though, again, with your position and what your responsibilities are, you might find yourself having to deal with the power of the NRA lobbying hand in Tallahassee. I mean, how do you foresee dealing with that?
You know, the reality is that, you know, as you correct it, as a past lobbyist, you also need to know where your boundaries are. That, you know, if you want to actually change legislation and change policy, run for office. A job of a lobbyist is to represent their client and to educate people. But there's a line that should not be crossed. And I do believe that the NRA lobbyist crosses that line on numerous occasions. So I have no problem on talking to anybody who would like to have conversations with me. But their influence over the office and directing policy, as I've said numerous times in my election, stopped when I was elected. That means that having undue influence and the policies that come out of my administration will not be at the hands of the NRA.
Again, we're talking with Agriculture Commissioner-elect Nikki Fried. She transitions into the role in early January. We're discussing key policy points that she campaigned on. And if you have questions for Ms. Fried, we'd like to hear from you. You can, again, tweet us at WLRN Sundial. You can find us on Facebook. Again, look up WLRN Sundial or give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. As I mentioned, Ms. Fried, you are going to be a Democrat working with a Republican governor, a Republican legislature. What do you see as your greatest challenge moving forward?
You know, I think the greatest challenge is that everybody has a knee-jerk reaction, you know, when there's a split in parties, and making sure that the Republicans, who I know a vast majority of them, having worked in Tallahassee, that I have most of the, you know, all the issues that I campaigned on, I kept talking about that they're nonpartisan and that they obviously cross party lines and that there are issues that affect everybody in the state of Florida. And so my hope is that they are actually states men and women and want to do what's best for the state. And that does not mean a power grab, and that they're actually allowing my department to do things that we were elected to do. But no, I have longstanding relationships with both sides of the aisle. The things that I campaigned on are, you know, affect everybody equally, and really looking forward to having those good conversations with the leadership on the House and the Senate, as well as the governor's office, on how we can work together on changing some good policies for the state.
Does that also mean that you're willing to compromise on any of the positions that you've campaigned on?
You know, I think that's part of when you get an elected position, you come in with, I want to fix water policy issues. And so that means bringing everybody to the table and having a very constructive conversation and pulling together, you know, scientists and all the stakeholders and bringing everybody to the table. And so I will definitely take direction on what advice of some of the leading experts. You know, so I have been very vocal on wanting to be a proactive participant in fixing our water issues and the red tide and the green algae and water quality for generations to come. And so that's going to take a very, you know, dedicated team of people sitting around a table for, you know, 6 months to a year and come up with best management practices for how we move forward. So I'm very, you know, committed to doing things and very open-minded to what's the best path. You know, that's, I think, as I went through the campaign, you know, a lot of people were asking, why is it important that, you know, first female elected and what do you bring to the table? And I said, you know, I'm not worried about my ego. You know, I want to come up with good policy. And if somebody proves me wrong on a direction that needs to be taken, I definitely do not die on my sword. I want to make sure that it's the right policy for the state of Florida. And so I want to make sure we're doing those types of things. So if it means changing a little bit of where I came from, but my heart's in the right place and trying to fix these things that are affecting all of us.
Now, you talk about water. So that was one of the three W's for you, which is the water issues. Now, this was also a big one for Governor-elect DeSantis. He ran on the algal blooms in Lake Okeechobee and Big Sugar. It seems like you're both kind of on the same page here, but what do you see as the next, the big pressing issue that you need to tackle, this administration needs to tackle in the next couple of years when it comes to protecting our water? What do you want to go at first?
You know, what I want to go at first is that during campaigns, a lot of times it's easy to use political jargon. And, you know, we saw all of the green algae and the red tide, and everyone wants to blame somebody. And so fingers started being pointed, and a lot of it was politically driven. And so my first job is to make sure that we take politics out of the conversation, that we bring all the stakeholders at place, That's the agriculture community. That's development from the north. That's environmentalists. That's everybody. That's homeowners. And figure out the best management practices for the entire state. And that means, having incentives for people to use less water. That means more education. And so I think that the first, 6 months to a year, what I'd like to see is those kinds of constructive conversations and come up with a game plan of how to protect our water, because it is a natural resource that it isn't endless. And so if we don't start doing things today to protect our environment and protect our water sources, these will not be conversations that we're going to have in 4 years, because we will have done irreversible damage to our ecosystem.
And we recently had, one of the finalists for the $10 million George Barley Water Prize. And this is a prize from the Everglades Foundation to develop technology solutions for the algal bloom, not just in Florida, but around the world. Do you see private industry as the solution for the crisis, or does it all fall on the state, or maybe it's partnerships?
I love partnerships. I think partnerships are a great thing, because it is our responsibility as elected officials to oversee these types of issues, like from the DEP, from the governor's office, to water policy and ag in my department. So there's a lot of water management districts. So it's a partnership, but yet the people who benefit from it are on the private side. So outside of just general citizens. So there is needs to be, and they've got a public-private partnerships and respect, and the private companies have more of the capital that they can utilize for some of this. So I do think it is a partnership, and it's leadership from both the private companies as well as from the elected officials.
The other thing too, and you probably saw this as well, is that the federal government released a report on climate change indicating that Floridians are likely to see more storms, flooding, more rainfall in the coming years from, again, increased climate temperatures. That's going to have a definitive impact on agriculture in the state. So how are you going to work with farmers to ensure that they are dealing with this issue, that the state is helping them? And I bring it up because, from the last administration, there was a lot of, a lot of pushback against the idea of climate change. But how are you going to tackle this?
Well, as you saw, the report came out. Climate change is a reality, and I think step one is recognition of it. Step two is coming up with ways that all of us, this didn't happen overnight, and this didn't just happen by chance. This is something that is man-made, a lot of these issues. So that means that we need manned solutions, and that means everybody. Look, our farming community and our ranchers, they live off of our land. That is so sacred to them, and so it's giving them the tools and the resources to come up with new technologies and implement them on the way that they're using their best management practices, and then recognizing those that are the good actors in the industry, and also going after the ones that are not living up to their standards.
But Ms. Freak, did you by any chance, during the campaigning, have the chance to talk with farmers? I wanted to get a sense of their ideas, their thoughts on the conversations about climate change, and how is it impacting them?
Oh, absolutely. We talked about it all the time. And a lot of the aspects of climate change is on the usage of water and fertilizers. And so we did talk a lot about that, and new technologies and new resources that they can utilize to make sure that they're effective and efficient in utilizing what is out there. So we did have lots of those conversations, and I went out to a lot of the farms that are using fantastic water management systems and upgrades. So there's a lot that's out there, and bringing new technologies into the state as well. We saw out in Israel, and I talk about this all the time, but Israel has, from a land of desert, there is, they created a fertile land and have some of the best industries when it comes to citrus and water management. And we got to learn from our neighbors to the east and to the west.
Okay. And how about also the fact that, we saw with Hurricane Irma, there was a lot of destruction on citrus. But I wanted to get the sense again from farmers, is how do they feel about these conversations about climate change and how it's impacting, weather systems, and it's going to impact the bottom line? Are they open to the kind of conversations that we see on coastal cities on resiliency and so forth?
I, Absolutely. You know, like I said, this is they live off of this land. They are feeling it. They saw, you know, that the hurricanes are coming and they're coming more fierce and they're coming more frequently. And so they need to be doing things to protecting their bottom lines and to be adapting to what's happening out there. And so they're seeing it, and they certainly are wanting to have these conversations. There's a new generation of farmers that are coming up, and they want to make sure that they keep their land as well. And how they do that is they have to, you know, they have to change too, and they have to move into new technologies and new resources.
Again, we're talking with Agriculture Commissioner-elect Nikki Fried, and we are discussing some of her platform issues and some of the things that she wants to tackle once she gets into office. And again, the new administration will be taking power in January. If you have a question for the new Agriculture Commissioner, the number is 800-743-9576. I want to go to Joe in Coconut Grove. He wants to ask you about one of the other W's on your list, which is weed. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot. Congratulations, Commissioner Fried. This is Joe Stone from Felony, Miami. We're super proud of you. And I have a question about the licensure for growers. How is that going to work under your administration?
Well, as you know, I don't oversee, the legislature puts out that type of program. But I will be, you know, I've obviously been a huge advocate of, you know, more growers and breaking up the, some of the vertical aspect of it and making more people involved in the program and breaking down some of those barriers for entry, as well as also reduces the cost, which means better patient access. So while I do not have direct control over the licensing structure, it's definitely conversations that I've already started with the legislative leadership, which I will continue to pursue and start having those conversations, even with Governor DeSantis, as we're going through some of these legal challenges that are still out there from the first couple of rounds of the application process.
And one of the things, too, is the fact that, you know, the voters a couple of years ago overwhelmingly voted yes for legalization of medical marijuana. But there's been criticism that the legislature has tried to thwart that by making it more difficult for this industry to grow. Do you believe that? And what could you do about that?
Oh, I mean, I campaigned on that. I am a huge, you know, supporter of expansion. I do absolutely believe that the legislature and the governor's office has done everything humanly possible to stop the expansion of medical marijuana in our state. And so what I get to do is I get to be a vocal, you know, I will have a soapbox every single day up in Tallahassee discussing these issues. I hope too that, that Governor DeSantis realizes that I have a huge passion and knowledge base on this issue and will loop me in on conversations with the Department of Health for implementation. And that our legislative leadership will also allow me an opportunity to help create new laws to expand access, you know, and then under my current administration, I have, you know, oversee pesticides and I oversee fertilizers and I oversee edibles. So I do plan on putting out a rulemaking notice for the first week when I'm in office on putting out the edible rules and start talking about how we also move our state into hemp, which would also be under my authority.
You know, I wanted to come back real quickly and ask you why you wanted to run for this position.
Yeah, you know, so it's something I have always been from early childhood, always wanted to give back and to do good things for our community and our society. I was doing food banks and food deserts, food banks and Habitat for Humanities back in high school. And I always knew that one day I wanted to run for office and make a difference. It just was always a matter of which office and when. And, you know, the reality is that the Commissioner of Agriculture is really such a huge responsibility in our state. It not only oversees our entire agriculture, but all of our consumer services, all of our concealed weapons and consumer services, everything from fraud at the gas station pumps to auto repair shops to fitness centers, to our school lunch programs. And there's just such a huge amount of responsibility under this one position. And I felt that I can make the greatest impact by being elected into this position. And so I saw this as really as a way to change things in our state and make them better.
And I know that it wasn't part of the platform so much for you, but, you know, looking back on your past, I mean, this was important when you were running for student body president at the University of Florida. You were the first woman in that position in 20 years. Now, when you left the post, you'd said, let's not make it about that. It's got to be about the right candidate. But you were running in the year that they were saying this is supposed to be the year of the woman and we're in the Me Too movement. How important is that, you know, in having more women in these powerful positions in our legislatures, we saw a lot of women winning positions in Congress. But you didn't talk about it as much, but it was important, though, right?
Absolutely. As the first female elected to this position, I felt it was important, and for a lot of reasons. One is, you know, I do think that women have a different negotiation style. Like I said earlier in this interview, that it's not about ego. It's about getting the right result. And so I come to an opportunity to, you know, come to a table and not come with my ego, come with wanting to be solution driven. And so that's a difference. And then the other thing, too, is, you know, I talk a lot about on the campaign trail, my 9-year-old niece, and wanting young women to know that there are no barriers for them, that they can do anything that they want to, and to reach for the stars. And, you know, the amount of text messages that I have received after the election from people that I had gone to elementary school, middle school, high school, college with, and talking about, you know, saying thank you, that they have, you know, taught their daughter. You know, a friend of mine that I grew up in elementary told me that he told his daughter, this is what we teach about never giving up. And hearing those stories of people that I've grown up with talking to their young daughters about what can happen and to know that they can do anything, that gives me such inspiration that I'm getting to touch the lives of young women and young children across across the state of Florida. Really is, you know, it touches my heart and really gives me the motivation to kind of wake up every day and put myself out there to know, like I said, when I ran for student body president, it was a big deal because I had been the first female in 20 years. And a lot of my platform was talking about the history of women in the state of Florida at the University of Florida. And then my outgoing speech said, I don't want to ever talk about gender in an election again because I want it to be about the best candidate. But the best candidate can be a female because they've been given the opportunities to lead and to gain those experiences.
Once you make that transition and once you are in office, what is the first thing that Nikki Fried needs to tackle?
It's all three of those major issues. you know, basically day one, I talk about gun reform issues, dealing with the concealed weapons permit. And I talk about that in respect of making sure that we've done the audit in the office, making sure we've got the right personnel, talking about moving it over to FDLE. And also, and I've said this numerous times on the campaign trail too, dealing with the concealed weapons permits and medical marijuana. That a lot of people have a question, if they hold one card, does that eliminate them from the second? And I've done my research, and I will be making a very clear executive statement saying one has nothing to do with the other, that if you have a medical marijuana card, that will not preclude you from getting your concealed weapons permit or vice versa. I also will be putting out a notice of the edibles rule. I also would like to put out day one, a water panel, you know, a blue ribbon panel that's going to start going into all the moving parts of our water management issues in our state and start moving the ball on getting answers of how we can fix this for the future.
We've been talking with Agriculture Commissioner-elect Nikki Fried. Ms. Fried, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time. Got to get you back in once you're in office.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Well, just a reminder that tomorrow we're going to be talking with author Silas House about his book, Southernmost. It is the November title for the Sundial Book Club. So if you haven't joined, you got a question for him, you got to join the Facebook group first. So go to that. Just ask to join. We're welcoming everybody. And then post your question. If you read the book, you got a question, I'm going to be reading those questions to Silas tomorrow. So again, join our Sundial Book Club on Facebook. Well, still to come, there are miles of space in Miami that's not being utilized. It's under the Metro Rail line. We're going to learn how we can change that coming up next.